Thank you, Stephen. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Well, I thought I was going to get to do the geography lesson, but thank you for orienting everyone. I'm Katie. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is January 11th, 2007. I have a home group here in Virginia Beach. And I'm just going to click this window. I have a home group here in Virginia Beach called the Breakfast Club. We meet at 8 o'clock every morning except Sundays. And I have a sponsor, and I've had the pleasure of sponsoring other women. Really been the bright spot of my life. Anyway, I think I stopped looking at the participant count when it got over 50. And I don't know if everybody kind of remarks about that, but I'm just glad that in my little window there's only about 25 of y'all, so I don't have to quite as intimidated. And I also want to share that I am 12 weeks pregnant, and so which is just a miracle in so many ways. But hopefully you'll bear with me, because I kind of feel like I've had a hangover for about 6 weeks. It's like you're on the verge of you're going to retch, but you don't quite retch. Like, if you guys haven't been through it, it feels to me like a hangover. It brings it all right back. So just bear with me if I say anything a little weird. Hormones are powerful. But the adrenaline kicks in, and I just love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I am so grateful for the life I have today. And it's just so cool to be in this room with so many of you guys from all over the world. So I'll just start kind of like how I usually start. I think just a little background, I guess. My childhood was... My earliest memories, are of my father doing things that just a father shouldn't do. And, dealing with telling my mother that, 4 or 5, and she did everything right. But I was in and out of court, child protective services, therapists, she protected me. But I just always felt different. And, after being sober a while, I really can say today, I don't know that my childhood, I think I was born an alcoholic, I have it all throughout my family. But, I remember just always feeling different. And so I don't know if it was because of that or just kind of, I was born uncomfortable in my own skin, but it was a lot of moving around, a lot of just, we moved a ton. My mom, divorced my father, and we had a lot of financial difficulties. So I just just grew up feeling just that, with that kind of heaviness, I think. Just kind of that burden, kind of serious, just kind of different from the other kids. And my first drink was when I was 15, new group of kids. I had watched like enough after school specials that like I knew I was going to drink, but I didn't want to be like the girls on the after school specials. So I was only going to have 2 beers. And so I had this elaborate lie, because my mom's also super strict. And I had this elaborate lie, and I'm staying at a friend's house. It was all planned out. And I had those 2 beers. And I did it. I white-knuckled it. I did it, And I, and there were boys, and everybody was being silly and having fun. And it was just a wonderful night. Those 2 beers. It was perfect. I'd arrived. I was part of the group of cool girls, right? But I had those first, that first drink, you know, I had that rush, that feeling that, you know, it changed the way I felt. And what happened was it was like the egg timer, right? It kind of set the egg timer in me, and it was like, it was just waiting to kind of tick, 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 tick. But it took a little. So the next week we were going on a cruise, my mom and I, and it was like the first family vacation we ever had, right? Like I said, we had a lot of financial difficulties. It was a really big deal for my mom. So the first night on the cruise ship, and I'm 15, and I looked like a baby. I kind of look young now, but anyway, so I find the group of kids on the boat immediately who are going to drink, who want to drink. Like I didn't even know I wanted to drink. The first night we're in Nassau, Bahamas, and I get off with these guys and we get in like this little weird limousine taxi and we go God knows where. I am blackout drunk and like not blackout, I guess like my blackouts were like, it was like colors like swirling around me, you know, motion and just, I mean, I was having fun, but bottom line, we missed the boat. You know, I was so drunk. I missed the boat. And you know, like if you've ever been on a cruise, they want you back at 3 and then they're going to leave. I mean, there's thousands of people on the ship. My mom can't find me. She doesn't know where I went. They're like launching a search party. And so it's like that. I can do it. I can just drink 2 beers when I want to, but it's like, it's just a matter of time before it's like, you know, consequences completely out of control. You know, like basically I said, F it and I'm going to have fun. And I mean, and that's kind of like how my drinking was, you know, with just some kind of just terrible consequences mixed in and a lot of just depression in between. And so it took me a long time. When I finally got into AA, to really like figure out I was an alcoholic, and I still had periods for many, many years where I questioned it. You know, even when I'm like going to AA meetings, I feel better afterwards. I'm like, well, maybe I'm not an alcoholic, you know, but anyway. So when I realized like what I connected with most in the beginning was when I started doing step work with my sponsor, who's still my sponsor today. And we read that part in the big book where it says, and if I get it wrong, I'm going to blame the pregnancy hormones, but, you know, the obsession of every abnormal drinker is that they will one day control and enjoy their drinking. Because I could control my drinking still. There were nights where I could control my drinking. I could say, I'm not going to drink. I wouldn't drink. I'm only going to have one drink, and I could do it. But then the binge would come. It was just a matter of time. And when the binge would come, or I would say, F it, it was just so unpredictable what would happen. And so when I could control it, but I didn't enjoy it. So when I was in control, I was really pissed. I'm like, I'm looking around at you guys and you're drunk, or I was judging, you know. And then when I said F it and I'm enjoying my drinking, it was completely out of control. So like, I knew I was the abnormal drinker. I was really sure about that after I read that passage, you know, and I kept just learning more. So, you know, high school, I was a really good student, got into college. Drinking was a huge part of college. A big part of what I, also did to get alcohol and then get the drugs I wanted. It had to do with like, you know, being in relationships with men. Like that was my source. So I was always attracted to like, well, like guys who sold drugs and guys who like to party, you know, and like, so I was around some unsavory characters. But I also had people that looked out for me a lot too along the way. And I just kind of was that work hard, play hard until I got to graduate school. So I'm at an Ivy League graduate school in New York City. Youngest person in my class on a complete full ride scholarship. And the drinking is just progressing. And I felt so isolated and alone in New York City. And so that's when it got, you know, I was working really, really hard. It was kind of the first time where, you know, school was really challenging. And then I didn't really know anybody in the city. So I didn't really have like a support system. And I was part, you know, I was going, you know, to nightclubs. I was, dating and just, and the drinking, was just, like I said, getting more and more unpredictable. So like the blackouts, like waking up in the back of a taxi crying, like not knowing how I got there. I had a taxi driver take me to an ATM and force me to get money out. I'd pass out on the subway, wake up. Like I was up in the Upper West Side, but I'd wake up in the way Upper West Side on the subway. So like just stuff like that was starting to happen. But really, I think what was the most excruciating parts was like the depression for me in between. So, you know, I had this childhood history of abuse. I had my mom who was, you know, supporting me. I was seeing a therapist in New York City. You know, and I go in there and we talk about my childhood. And what that did, and I don't know what she said really, but what I heard just made me feel hopeless because like I couldn't change my past. So if my past was why I feel so awful now, I couldn't hear a solution. And it just felt like more and more hopeless. And we talk more about my past. And then I'd like go home and lay on the couch and like watch Oprah and eat bonbon cookies and like not go to school. And like it just spiraled, you know, it just, I don't know if you've ever had those types of feelings of hopelessness. It like builds on itself to the point where, you know, I did finish that program and I had to go to work in Brooklyn. So I'd have to get on the train and I was so unable to like almost function at that point. It was so terrifying to talk to a group of students I was teaching. I would cry and I would think about throwing myself in front of the subway train. And, like I couldn't, I was a basket, you know, I was 25 at the time, 24, 25. And I, you know, my mom said, you got to come home, you know, and I just gave up, you know, I love New York City. It's the only place I ever felt terribly regretful about moving. I loved it there. And I just felt like such a failure, but I couldn't, I knew I couldn't survive up there. And I moved back home to Virginia Beach and I, was living in my mom's house. Again, I felt like such a total loser. Cause like everybody, it's like you grow up and you want to leave your hometown and I'm like back with all the people who never left. And I was like, but I'm still here and it's awesome. So. Yay for hometowns. But anyway, so I didn't really know what my problem was, but that same therapist that I told you about 2 years prior had asked me about my drinking. You know, she kind of saw right through what was going on and she gave me a little card, and a phone number. for an AA meeting in New York City. Never went, kept the card, still have the card. But 2 years later, when I'm in Virginia Beach, Virginia, nothing better to do, I remembered what she said. And, you know, my mom was out of the country. I mean, this sounds so superficial, but like, usually if I was having a bad day, my mom was around, we might have gone to shopping and then I'd forget, you know, or something would have happened, but like nothing, there was nothing to do that day. And I remembered what that therapist said and I called up AA and the guy on the phone, was nice, but I told him, you know, I'm only going to go to a women's meeting because the therapist had told me about that there were women's meetings. I'm like terrified of men at this point. And I think men are the problem or a big part of my problem. And so I only wanted to go to a women's meeting. And there was one that very same day. And I don't, you know, it took me a long time to find a higher power. You know, I'm still kind of looking like I'm still, you know, my beliefs are just, you know, just grow with so many experiences I have. But like I had, anyway, I just feel like they, like people talk about seconds and inches. Like if I had had anything else to do that day, if there hadn't been a women's meeting, if there had been any excuse, it sounds so superficial because it really was life and death for me at that point. But I didn't know that. And, anyway, I go to this meeting. You know, it was like this little window. I feel like there was this little window and I slipped right through it. I went to this women's meeting. And they asked if, you know, they knew I was new. And so instantly it became a meeting about step one. And they talked about, this is what I heard. I heard the women talking about having lives beyond their wildest dreams. And I was like, okay, I can go for that. And, you know, I was just open to it, but I also, there were women with like long-term sobriety. So they talked about the changes in their life. And I think that really, pulled me in. And I just kept going back, you know, women would invite me to go with them to meetings and I go, and I found my sponsor who took me through the steps about 6 months into sobriety. Didn't end up going through the steps till a little after 1 year. But what happened was I met a woman who had the same childhood experiences that I did. And, you know, just to name it was sexual abuse. And so there were some pretty dark memories and just heavy stuff, right? And I just thought, well, you know, it's like we all think, well, if you had been through what I'd been through, you'd drink too. And I know that a lot of women who've gone through what I've gone through, you know, do use alcohol. And I do, in some ways, feel like alcohol protected me until I could find AA. Because some of that stuff was pretty dark and heavy. And so this wonderful, amazing woman, Lynn, you know, shared her story with me. And you know what? She wasn't a self-centered asshole. Like all I thought about was myself. I didn't realize that till I started hearing you guys talk about selfishness and self-centered. I was like, yeah, all I do is think about myself. She didn't. And she was happy. And you can't compare people's, you know, childhood experiences, but like I heard about what she went through and you know, her mom didn't protect her and get her out of the situation the way my mom did. So it was like a little seed of gratitude. And it was also like, okay, healing's possible. Like I don't have to be miserable because, you know, she was right there in front of me and we worked the steps and, you know, she was able to relieve me of things like that feeling of being damaged goods. Like I was so broken because of what happened to me as a child. I'd never be able to be in relationships. She's like, you're not damaged goods. She did put me on a sabbatical from dating for a while. She said I needed to, you know, take a break from that. I don't know if any of your sponsors have given you that advice. And it was just like, I just had one of those five, six, seven, eight, nine experiences that, I mean, it was just so utterly transformational. She said, you know, you can, I used her higher power and I didn't have one. And then after having that experience, you know, I just started to like think about something bigger than me at work. And I thought about all the hours of time that she had put into sponsoring to be able to carry the message to me in a certain way. And then all of the hours of time that other women had put into her. And it was like overwhelming. And immediately after we got through the steps, she had me start sponsoring. And I've had different sort of stages in sponsorship in my life. So like when I first started sponsoring, a lot of young women were attracted to me. You know, people with different experiences of using, you know, like just different things. But I, and then there would be women who had sort of my similar experience, you know, like, and I would just feel, you know, the abuse or just similar things in their fourth steps. And I would just feel so connected because there's that thing that felt like, you know, my greatest liability was transformed into my strongest asset. Like I am uniquely qualified to carry a certain message. And that has just been such a source of like, just feeling like there's a reason for being here. And, I just feel like I need that, you know, like I need that kind of shot in the arm, you know, like it's all, you know, like I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And I don't get that, you know, sometimes, you know, in the work or, you know, just in day to day stuff. So anyway, so Lynn, moved away and I was working with a different sponsor for a while. And, I had heard a speaker, an AA speaker talk about forgiveness. It was just, you know, you listen to speaker tapes. Maybe somebody's going to listen to this one day, but he said, what's the point of forgiveness if nobody knows you've forgiven them? And that, I don't think that's anywhere in the literature. Like, I don't know why he said it. And maybe I'm misquoting him. That's what I heard. And I thought about my father. You know, my father was obviously on my, you know, he was on my list coming out of my step work. And, you know, I didn't know how I'd make amends to him. I hadn't seen him since I was nine. But through working the steps, I had felt forgiveness for him. You know, I had heard, you know, hurt people. I kind of had this sense of, I don't know what was broken in him. And I kind of alluded to it earlier, but like the world was a very dark place for me when I first came in, right? I was very fearful of men. I was very fearful. Like I always felt like people were going to be taking advantage of me. Like I was just very, very fearful. And that started to be lifted after working the steps. But I think I had this feeling like, you know, like I kind of grew up with this idea, like my father was bad and he could never be redeemed. You know, there was no fixing him. And so after I saw people in recovery, after I recovered myself, like it was like I got to this place where I had to believe that recovery was possible for him as well. Like almost to like exist in the world, like my outlook on the world had to shift. Like it couldn't be such a dark place, but like recovery was possible for anyone. Like that's where I was moving in my growth, you know, like we're in these meetings. We see these miracles every day. Like, so anyway, I didn't know what I was going to say to him, but I reached out to him. I had lunch. And I think if I'd been working with my first sponsor, she would have said, uh-uh. But this new woman said, yeah, I'll go with you. And we went and we met with my father, and I was terrified, like shaking. And he was there with his new wife. And I talked about what I had been through between age 9 and I was like 29, you know? And it was kind of small talk. And he was very nervous. And, like, I remember looking at him, and he looks like me. And, like, I get nervous and, like, kind of trail off when I get nervous. Probably have done it tonight. And he did the same thing, you know? So there's just something really powerful about seeing yourself in your parents. You know, if you didn't grow up with them, maybe you can, you know, if you're, you know, have a chance to reconnect. But, and he kind of would say, he kind of said something like, if I ever did anything to hurt you, I'm sorry, you know, but the truth is, like, whatever happened, whatever he did, he can't admit that. And I understand that. And he's still very sick. You know, I could tell he's, you know, I realized I wasn't supposed to be in a relationship with him on an ongoing basis, but it was kind of like me telling him, look, I'm at peace. You know, I'm okay. You know, I found recovery. I told him about recovery for me. And, you know, that was kind of that, you know, he has a life that he's living in, a path that he's on. And I don't know what I'm called to do in it, but at this point I'm on my own separate path. And so it wasn't about him changing. It was, like I said, I think about me bringing that attitude of peace, like, and then me walking through fear. I think that was a big part of it as well. So that was just huge. I got married shortly after that to a man I met at a Saturday night AA meeting. And when he was 70 days clean, and my sponsor said, you need to respect his sobriety. And he asked me out like a couple weeks later, and he asked three guys before asking me out. And anyway, I don't recommend dating new people, but what my sponsor says about it is, like, she feels like God brought us together so that we'd stop messing around and being hit on by other people. And, you know, I think we were just both out in a place where we wanted sobriety so much that we listened to our sponsors. We had our own meetings and we tried to stay out of each other's business. I guess it's respecting sobriety. You know, always, like I said, I always thought guys were trying to take stuff from me, but I was also always trying to get stuff from men, right? Like drugs or the date to the cool club or whatever it was. Like, I was, you know, and so, like, it was just this, it wasn't like that with him. It wasn't, there weren't games, you know, we were just young and trying to stay sober. And well, we'll be married 10 years this June. We have a 3-year-old daughter, and, you know, we've lived in different places. We've moved in sobriety. You know, he's had a lot of health challenges, which I know have been hard for him. But I've been a real big baby brat about it too, you know, very resentful. Like, this isn't what I wanted out of a marriage, right? I've worked really hard to progress in my career in sobriety. I went back to school. I love school. But always felt like, because I was a woman, I didn't get the same amount of, you know, money, respect, opportunities, a lot of resentment. So, you know, I don't know how long I'm supposed to share. So somebody just wave at me if I'm going too long. But what I was thinking, I'd talk a little bit about was kind of how those resentments accumulated. And the things in my career, resentments against bosses, things people said to me, not being paid enough, all of these like resentments around work, and I've switched jobs and I quit, and I'm very, very just resentful at work, very judgmental of the people I work with. And then very, very resentful toward my husband because of like his health issues. And, and so I told you about my first experience with a fourth, fifth, you know, five through nine. I had the opportunity, in January of this year to do another really big fist up with my sponsor. And it was all about this stuff with work, and it was all about this stuff with my husband. Okay. And so what I do with my husband is I get all emotional. I get all upset about something. And then I'm like, I just don't know if this is going to work out. I can't deal with this anymore. Maybe we're not meant to be. I basically threaten divorce. And I'm not trying to make light of this, and I don't know how many of y'all do this, but I do it. It's very hurtful to him. And then at my job, I have threatened to quit three times, my current job, three times since last June, because my boss doesn't talk, you know, is kind of, she's not the nicest part, you know, she kind of rages and she yells and screams and she curses and she's not. She's kind of rough around the edges. I just threatened to quit. I threatened divorce all the time. I didn't know this going into my step work, but it came out. And, I guess what I wanted to say was I was so scared again, as scared as I was the first time I did the steps, that they weren't going to work. I had carried around this baggage, these resentments against my husband, these resentments against workplaces for not, you know, acknowledging my amazingness. And I was sick. I was sick. And, but I was just as scared that the steps weren't going to work. Even though I'd had that experience like years before, like, why would the steps work on this? I just need to do it harder myself. I need to fix this thing. I need to say the right things. I need to figure it out. And I was just in enough pain that I spent the time and I did the step work with my sponsor. And it wasn't like this instant answer, but there were little things. And I started to see the patterns. I started to see the connections and what I was doing. And so we kind of made the list of names, and Lynn was like, you know, you got to stop threatening divorce. And then we talked about what the amends would be. She's like, I don't want you to make it right now. I think you need to wait 2 months until you, and once you've gone 2 months without threatening divorce, then you make amends to your husband and you explain. Because like, there has to be a change. And then I'm going through work day to day. You know, again, it wasn't this instant answer. But again, there's this situation where I was like, I don't know if I could take this anymore. And I told them that. I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I, you know, I basically threatened to quit again. And I called my sponsor on that day, and she said, look, Katie, you have permission to quit your job. You have permission to quit your job. But like, you know, she's always, and this meeting's called Spiritual Improvement Group. So I hope you guys can relate to this, but I called her up, you know, and something just didn't, you know, she always kind of called out the alcoholic thinking, you know, the alcoholic thinking, like, I want more recognition, more peace, more comfort, more, you know, more. And she was like, look, you have permission to quit. but like, why don't you just go pray about, you know, go pray tonight, you know, see what you feel like the next day. So like, of course, I'm like 8 weeks pregnant. I feel like crap. I don't go home and pray. I go home, get in my pajamas and watch Netflix. What happened? I get a text from this girl I know in AA. I haven't talked to in 2 years. In my same line of work, having a total meltdown about her job, texting me all these things out of the blue 2 years later. I haven't talked to her in 2 years. Wonderful person. But she is like talking about her issues at work. They are my issues. I see myself in her. And it was like, okay, maybe they're my higher powers at work, right? Like, I don't know how this is all working, but like, this woman is calling me asking for help. I feel like, you know, I can support her. I have a little pieces of the solution, you know. I have experience with the things she's going through. So I called up Lynn. It was 10:30. I never call her that late. I'm like, you won't believe what happened. And she's like, yeah. She's like, well, I prayed for you. I put you in my God box, right? She prayed for me, you know. And I hope all this has like a thread of connection, but like, you know, God's still working in my life. I am still powerless. You know, I'm powerless over alcohol, but my life is still unmanageable. Like, I still need AA, and I am just so, so grateful that I still feel that pull. And I'm so grateful to have those little God shots, right? Like flipping through that window, getting to my first AA meeting, seconds and inches, Kelly texting me about her job, and just feeling like, okay, there is something bigger at work. And I don't know what's changed in me, but it's like my perspective on my job, there's just been this complete change in my heart where I look at the people I work with as sick people, imperfect people, and I want to be a part of what they're doing. You know, the projects we are working on are fascinating, interesting, and the motives behind them are good. And I really want to be a part of this. And I don't care about my compensation. And I'm saying that honestly. There's been such a change in my heart. Now, I haven't said anything to anybody because, like, it's like I got to wait 2 months with my husband before I threaten divorce. Like, I'm going to wait a couple months. You know, you guys can get my number and check back in and see if, like, if this sticks. But, like, I mean, I just, it's the power of these steps. You know, you just, whatever you're going through, you don't gotta be stuck in it. And when I'm stuck in it, I don't feel like praying, you know, and maybe that's the depression. And I know some people get in really strong habits in this program. And I've had times where I have better habits than others, better ways of connecting with my higher power. But like, sometimes you just need people in your life who'll pray for you. And sometimes I just need to be at meetings where I get to hear about your God shots. Because then I remember my God shots, you know, too. So I recommend that. And I, you know, my higher power is, has just been so, I can't explain it to you, but I will say it's tremendously practical. You know, so for any of you guys that are like, struggling with that. You know, it's been also a struggle for me at times, but it's also been the thing that has gotten me through, kind of gotten me unstuck, when I needed to be unstuck. And so, you know, I was thinking of one other thing I wanted to tell you guys tonight. I wanted to say, ask for other people to pray for you if you can't pray for yourself. I was thinking, what is the other thing? It's left me. But, and Stephen, are you there? Are we good?
We're good.
I feel like I'm done.
We're good.
Anyway, thank you for having me tonight. And I hope you got something out of that. And I'm just very, very grateful to be sober and a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. So.